Session number 16701, real one.
Mr. Thornton, real one. Where were you born, please?
In Liverpool.
Could I have your date of birth, please?
The 2nd of the 3rd, 1922.
Did you go to school in Liverpool?
Yes.
Which school was that?
St. Paul's, Kirkdale.
And how old were you when you left school?
14.
So that was not long before the war started? Just a few years.
Before the war started, yeah.
How did you come to be in the Navy?
I just volunteered to go into the Navy. And I went to St. John's Lane, Liverpool, to enlist. And
which year was this?
This would be 1939.
Why did you decide to enlist in the Navy?
Well, I fancied the Navy somehow or other.
Did you tell them how old you were?
Yes. They were taking recruits at the age of 15 and a half and 17 and a half. Well, I was over the 15 and a half age group, so they took me in for the 17 and a half group and to join for 7 years and 5 years on the reserves, short service.
Was it easy to get into the Navy?
No. Well, it was in a way, but you still have to do a pretty stiff exam with eyesight tests and one thing and another, like, you know.
Had you done a job before you went into the Navy in Civvy Street?
Yes, I started off from the age of 14 as a grocer's boy, and I left that to join the Merchant Navy on coastal shipping, like, and I went on one trip from Liverpool to Jersey and returned again. And by the time I'd returned to Liverpool again, my call-up papers had come to join the Navy on August the 15th, 1939. And, of course, as I said, war broke out on September the 3rd. That was about a fortnight before. Oh, I joined the Navy a fortnight before the war broke out on September 3rd.
Whereabouts were you trained?
HMS Wildfire, Sheerness in Kent. I did 6 months training there.
What was that like?
Pardon?
What was it like?
It was great. I enjoyed it. Yes.
Why was it so good?
Probably because I was used to discipline and one thing and another, and I think it just appealed to me, like, the Navy.
You told me you were homesick, though.
True. That was in when I came on my first leave in the Christmas of the New Year, and I got home all right, and all the people making a fuss from one thing and another. When I went back on the train, I broke down crying just before I got back to the Sheerness, back to HMS Wildfire. But unbeknownst to anybody, like, you know.
I think you were 17, were you?
17, yeah.
Where did you go to after Wildfire?
Pardon?
Whereabouts did you go to after Wildfire?
To Devonport Barracks in Plymouth, and there I was allocated then to HMS Glorious.
Can you describe when you joined the ship, what it was like?
Yes, as far as I can make out, we went across Channel to France, and we travelled overland from France to the Mediterranean part of France and caught a ship that took me out to Alexandria, HMS Glorious. And from there we went to Malta. And from Malta we must have got orders then to go to join the Home Fleet at Greenock.
What did you think of the ship when you first went aboard?
I thought the ship was wonderful, but I got lost on it because it seemed like a big town to me. You know, I hadn't been on a big ship like that before, and getting from one end of the ship to another and different decks, I just didn't know where I was going after until I had to ask people which way I was going and how to get to certain parts of the ship, like, and I got directions off them.
Did they make you welcome aboard?
Yes, yes, yeah.
What was your job aboard ship?
I was a seaman, a boy seaman.
What kind of things did you have to do?
Well, anything connected with the ship coming into port or for tying up or that, but I didn't do a lot of them things because I was still a bit young to do the manual part, like. But my action stations was on the fore part of the ship, on the forecastle, and the 4.7 anti-aircraft gun.
What did you have to do on the gun?
Just fire the guns if necessary, like, but the way it was, I didn't find any cause for firing any guns.
Were you happy aboard the ship?
Yes, I was happy, yeah.
Where did the ship sail to next?
Well, we started going out with the Home Fleet then to Norway. We were, as far as I can make out, we were sort of going out to support our troops that were in Norway at the time, like, you know, they hadn't, Norway hadn't fallen then. I think we went out on a couple of occasions with the fleet, but we were mostly concerned with flying the aircraft off to support, give support to the troops out in Narvik. And from there the aircraft would do probably sorties and then fly back on board again, like, you know. But there were occasions when we took RAF personnel out with us and Hurricanes and flew them off to support out there, and we returned about 3 weeks later. I think Norway was about to fall and or just fall, and we brought the aircraft, well, they landed the aircraft back on again, and I think out of the 18 we flew off, I think there were only about, could be out only about 8 or 9, I think, returned. The rest must have been shot down in combat or something like that.
Did you have any special friends aboard ship? Do you remember who they were?
Yeah, there were a few friends in my mess, like, you know, but when it come to duties and anything, they seemed to go to other parts of the ship, like, so it wasn't always connected, only through being in the mess with them, like, with the boys that we stood together, like.
Do you remember any of their names?
I think one was Ernest Harper. I think he lost his life when he came home on survivor's leave. There's on the gable end of a wall of these houses, and that was welcome home to Effie Thornton, hero of HMS Glorious, aged 18 years. And of course some people noticed that, and they probably lost people on that ship. Was found out where it lived and inquired, like. But as I said, when we went in the Carly floats, we seemed to lose, you know, we just went on what was floating, like, and just mixed with anyone, which I didn't know a lot of the people on the Carly float, but they could have lost their lives either through being submersed in the water, or through frostbite, or they might have lost their lives on the ship before she went down. But I remember getting the orders to abandon ship, and of course must have jumped overboard. The ship was listing then over to starboard side. We had noticed the what you call it in the distance, the German battleships, but we didn't know quite who they were till they opened fire on us. And of course we got hit once or twice, I think, one on the bridge and a couple of more aft. But where we were on the forecastle, we couldn't see what was happening through the flight deck being in the way. We could only see the forecastle part of the ship, like. And when we went abandoned ship, there was steam coming out the side of the ship, and I had the presence of mind to either get scalded by the steam or to go under the water, clear of it, till I thought it was clear, you know, and then just come up to the side. And well, I must have got away with being still alive anyway. I didn't see the ship go down, but there's quite a few of us on the Carly floats. It could be about 20, maybe 25 of us. And we just reminiscing that the ship had probably sent an SOS message or a distress message that we get picked up pretty soon, like. And of course as time wore on, I still kept me pecker up and thought, well, somebody be around. Well, we'd been out in Norway, you get what you call, it's what they call the land of the midnight sun. There's hardly any darkness, just like a twilight, and the rest seems to be daylight, it's, you know, all the time, like. So I lost contact with time and what day it was. And when some people started, you know, just dying off, one of them was in the Carly float, was under the water, and all he could see was a froth coming out of his mouth. Well, what was left of us, we just put them over the side. And just carried on from there. One of the, I think it was a petty officer's chef, he must have got his foot wedged in the gratings of the Carly float, and with the water his foot had swelled, that he was too heavy, couldn't move him to take him out, like, you know. So when we got picked up by the Norwegian trawler, there were still a few bodies in the Carly float, and we got taken on board, but I couldn't feel anything in my legs because they'd all swollen up with being immersed in the water. And we got taken to the Faroe Isles, and from there we were landed on shore. And those that were fit to travel, a destroyer came to pick us up. And those that couldn't travel, we had to leave them behind. The destroyer picked us up and took us to Rosyth up in Scotland, and took us to the hospital. and from there we were treated, then we were transferred up to King Street in Aberdeen, and that's where we started meeting, you know, the getting to know who the survivors were and who were friends, like, you know. And after a while we were transferred down to Devonport Barracks. Most of the survivors, as far as I can make out, were past medically unfit for the Navy, you know, to carry on any further duties, but I thought myself, well, I'm still well enough, I'll volunteer with somebody to go to sea again, like, you know, because I thought myself, well, the war's got to be done some way or another. And of course he granted it, and I went on board a corvette. I joined there up Middlesbrough, and became in the Mersey where I belong, like, you know, and we did the RC trials and everything.
Can I just go back to the beginning of the Glorious, of the action? Can you tell me again where you were on the ship when the German ships attacked?
Yeah, I was on the forecastle of the ship.
How long had you been on the forecastle for?
I was on the afternoon watch, on the Saturday afternoon. So I was already on duty, like. The afternoon watch would consist from 12 midday till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but the action had taken place before then, around about 3 o'clock, something like that, when we, you know, realised something was happening, like. The two destroyers, the Arcaster and the Ardent, one went out to engage the German battleships, and the other one laid a smoke screen around us because we'd been hit and we were crippled a bit. And when the smoke screen cleared, we didn't see sign of either destroyer, so one must have been sunk while she was laying the smoke screen, the other one had been sunk while she went out to engage. And that's when the ship was getting in a bad state then, like, where she'd been hit, like, and we were getting the orders to abandon ship. That'd be round about 4:30, something like that.
How frightening was the action for you?
It was frightening, but didn't unsettle me, like, you know. It didn't seem to dawn on me that we'd be having to abandon the ship, jump in the water, because I thought, well, I'm not the only one, there's other people in the floats. And from what we could hear from what was being passed from the bridge, because the bridge must have got blown up as well, but I couldn't see what was happening, like, they sent out a message. But there again, nothing happened, like, nothing come to pick us up or see if any survivors, and it's only the Norwegian trawler that picked us up. And we don't know, it was on a Tuesday, as far as I can make out, it was Tuesday, but I wouldn't be certain of that.
Did you see much of the damage being inflicted on the ship by the gunfire?
Actually, I didn't. I didn't even see the ship go down. You know, my mind must have been on other things, like, I don't know, but I didn't actually see it sink into the water and go down.
But before you abandoned the ship, did you see any hits on the ship?
No, I didn't see any hits, no. Because they must have been happening amidships, whereas I was at the fore end of the ship, like, you know. And somebody said there was, they'd arranged aircraft up to fly off apparently one of the shots must have hit the aircraft and blown them up before they could get away, like, you know, so it actually was a bit confusing.
Who was with you when you were at the action station? Do you remember?
No, I couldn't, because I'd only been I was only about 3 months on the ship from the, no, it could be less, because I was on a joined in the March, and she went down in June the 8th. But there's only one chap, was a Welsh chap, but I don't think anybody was injured on my gun turret. It's just that when we just had to abandon ship, I suppose the ship probably listed that much that there's no hope of saving it, like, you know.
Was there a petty officer in charge of your gun turret?
There would be, yeah. But such a long time ago, I can't remember the names with them, like, you know.
Can you describe again how you went into the sea?
Yes, I just jumped over the guardrails of the ship and into the water, like, you know. There was rafts already floating around, but just a matter of getting onto anything that was just floating, like. But we found out that there's no food or anything in the Carly float, because apparently it had been just painted a few days beforehand or something. I don't know whether they'd taken all the wartime rations out, survivors, food and that, you know, to keep you going, but there's nothing in it on them. Like, we just got in hoping that something would be around and pick us up.
But if you went into the water before you got into the Carly float.
Yeah.
How long were you in the water for?
Oh, before I got in the Carly float, it could be a matter of maybe, could be half an hour, could be less, it could be a bit more. But there was Carly floats around and wreckage, like, you know, and it's just a matter of getting on and just hoping for the best on them, like, you know.
How cold was the sea?
To me, I had no feeling of what the sea was like. I just automatically jumped in. And of course, like, the other chaps had come from abroad, like, their blood would be a bit on the thin side, being out in the hot climate in the Mediterranean, whereas I was just fresh on the ship. And being in June, I was pretty well acclimatised to the weather, like, you know. Probably if I'd have known I was going to be so long, probably I'd have given up, like, you know. And being so young, probably that's what kept me going, like.
What were you dressed in when you went into the sea?
Just in my overalls and sea boots and just pullovers and that, just to keep warm. And it's you know, just a matter of according to the weather being melts of people, it was cold, and just a matter of keeping wrapped up, like, you know. But that's how I went in. I wasn't in uniform, or it was just like a, when you go to action stations, you just get put on your lamb wool coat and everything that keeps you warm. Like, sorry, yeah. So.
And had you had a meal long before you went into the sea?
Yes, I must have had my midday meal before going on watch at midday, 11:30 that morning.
What would that have consisted of?
Well, usually on a Saturday it used to be corned beef and peas and potatoes and more or less like a cold dinner, I think.
And had you had a hot drink?
Probably I had, yeah. But most of the time we used to get hot drinks supplied to us, you know, cocoa, or especially when you're on watch, you know, to keep you going, like keep you awake. And as I say, it's all come as a surprise. I just probably couldn't believe what was going on half the time, like, you know.
And had you had a sweet course with the meal?
I imagine I would do, yes.
What would you have had?
Maybe a tin of fruit, or might be rice pudding or something like that.
And when you got into the Carly Float, were there many other people in it?
There was, yeah, and yet we seemed to get more on board, because as we got on board, we pulled other people from the water on board with us, like, you know, till probably couldn't get no more people on board, like, and just drifted around, because we had no oars or anything to guide us. We just seemed to drift, and we drifted with other Carly floats, and people shouting to one another, you know, you're all right and what have you, like, you know, and we give the okay, like, you know,
thumbs up.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but I think as time drew on, we seemed to be getting further away from one another, like, you know, I don't know whether it be the effects of the tide or water. Or
were there any wounded in your Carly float?
No, I don't think so. No, as far as I can make out, they seem fit enough. Just, I think most of the people, being a Saturday afternoon and everything being quiet, is what they were used to call a make amend day. You know, like a make amend afternoon, you could either write home to your people, or you could do little odds and ends on, like, darning socks, or read the book, or just to pass the time away. And they would, most of these people, or most, would probably have a sleep, I think. And then, of course, they'd been woken up by the sound of action stations, and half of them would be clad, like, you know, they wouldn't have the full clothing on, I suppose. They'd just grab what they could and up to action stations, and a lot of them would be caught out in the cold, I think. And that could have helped a lot to them not surviving very long.